This is an uncensored podcast about sex and sexual topics. Listener discretion is advised. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the person or persons sharing them. Some names have been changed to preserve the anonymity of its participants. Lovers, it's me, Drew Michael, and I am in the pod loft all by myself, and I am feeling, what am I feeling? Let me dig down deep and see what I'm feeling. I'm feeling a little tired. I'm feeling a little, just kind of like neutral, a little blah, a little like whatever. And fortunately for you guys, when I feel all of these kind of barfy feelings and just nothingness, generally I have a deeper, more sexy sounding voice. So there you go. I hope it turns you on or at least makes you come. Just kidding. You probably won't come. This episode is not going to be sexy. It's going to be sexually... it's going to be about sexual stuff, but it's not going to be like, ooh, that's so hot. I love that. And it's going to be funny only for the first part. So, how about that? Just a reminder, you guys, if you haven't already, would you please, please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on. I can't say it enough. It really helps. It's like the only thing that helps, with independent, cod pastors, podcasters. Yeah, it means literally, it's like the equivalent of giving me $1 million basically at this point. Just please subscribe. That's the most important thing. You could rate, you could review. I mean, my rating's pretty good based on the one rating I have. So there's that. And of course, you guys, like, I'm going to say it again at the end. I'll give you the email address and everything because I have it written down and I don't know where it is and I got to find it. I can't remember my own email address. Please write in. I'd love it. If you're listening and you have a sexual story, you can write in as anonymous. You can, you know, say asking for a friend. I would love to be reading some stories. They could be good, bad, ugly, funny, stupid, you know, whatever. It doesn't have to be your first time. It could be your last time. It could be, oh, I never have sex. I have this burning sensation when I pee. You know, like, I just want to hear about it. I want to hear about your gonorrhea. Please tell me you have gonorrhea. Anyway, so it's just me this week. Well, let me tell you why it's just me this week. I couldn't fucking find anyone to record with. And there's that. But I promised myself, more than I promised you guys, that I would be releasing an episode every 2 weeks. And I've asked like 10 people, and they were all busy, or they all had something going on, or they were all, you know, not wanting to record right away. They were like, let me think about it. And that's fine. That's all fine. Perrier. Of course, I don't drink when I'm alone because I just don't like it that much. And I usually drink when I'm podcasting. So, God, I hope I'm still funny when I'm not drunk. Jeez. That's like a big thing that, you know, famous people have to deal with when they get sober. So I couldn't find anyone, but that's okay. And we're going to try to keep this episode, you know, a relatively reasonable length. You know, it's one of those things where my favorite podcast, I've always talked about this. My favorite podcast is called My Favorite Murder with Karen Kilgareth and Georgia Hardstark. And they're always saying like, oh God, we did another 2-hour episode. Oh shit, we really got to get our shit together. And they're like one of the biggest podcasts you can have, you know? I would listen to them talk for 3 hours. I honestly love their podcast. The minute it's over, I'm like sad, you know, like I don't care that they're putting out 2-hour long podcasts. And someone out there might love me just as much as I love them, but I kind of doubt it. And it's not because I like don't value myself. I just kind of doubt that. I doubt that. So, you know, we're really not in a place like no one's like, you know, I'm really not famous. No one's like, oh my God, I'm obsessed with you, you know. And maybe they say that just to be nice, but like, I mean, no. So me having any episode over an hour and a half is like just really fucking too long. Any episode, I think at least 45 minutes to an hour is what I want to shoot for. Hour and a half is pushing it. We better be real fucking interesting if that shit's happening. So that's what I think. I really think that's good. I think giving you more episodes and not making, you know, it like once a month for 3 hours, I think that's better. So how about that, bitch? You like that? You like it right there? You like it right like that? Yeah, that's why I'm a bottom. Anyway, this guy just asked me if I liked... what did he say? He said, you like getting fucked? Wait, is that what he said? It's here on the grinder. I've been grinding again. Hell yeah, you like being bottom? And he spelled it BTM, like ATM. And that, when I see it, I keep thinking he's asking me if I'm an ATM. Or no, I'm a butt transaction machine. BTM. And you know, the truth is, I haven't bottomed in so long. That's all you get. Just a real big exhale. I'm not going to tell you if that exhale came from my mouth or my bottom. You're going to have to just guess. But it's been so long since I bottomed. I was going to make a story about how, like, my butt, like, makes little tiny tight farts now, but that's really not true. I have monstrous farts. It's just, there's so many things I shouldn't be eating that I keep eating. And it's like the body's, it's like when you die and your body expands with gases, except for I'm not dead yet. And I'm consciously able to release the gas by farting. That's disgusting. I should not tell people that. I should, as a single person in my late 30s, I should not go on and release that information to the whole world. But I just did. So anyway. This guy's username used to be something about, like, 8 inches uncut, and I was like, fuck yeah. And then I one time was just like, let me see it, you know, because, you know, if that's going to be your name, that's how I'm going to talk to you, you know? I mean, it's ridiculous. Both of us are being ridiculous. But now he's changed it to something about being an American Indian, and I'm like, fuck yeah. Well, it's American Indian 8 inches or something. Because he needs to remind you that he's 8 inches. And that's great. And I would love to date an American Indian. I would probably call him an indigenous person or Native American. But, you know, he can tell me what he wants me to call him. I could probably just call him Big Papa. You know, that would probably be fine. So anyway, you guys, I wanted to share this. I've been, just like cut myself off. I have been wanting to share this for a while. This podcast is hosted through Anchor and, You'll hear their ad in a bit. And you can go on their little app. It's now run by Spotify. And they'll tell you, like, all this, like, different, the analytics and shit. So I'm on here, and I saw this a while back, and I've never had a chance to talk about it. Is it even on here? Where the fuck is it? Oh, analytics. Well, if you click on the thing you're fucking talking about, that might help. It tells you, like, how many people have played it, all, you know, your podcast altogether. What's the average plays per episode? Like, what's your average audience size at one time? How much money I've made? I'm not going to tell you. It's not a lot. Because it's all from sponsors, right? And we only have one sponsor, and it's Anchor. What I find very interesting is the geographic information. Like, for instance, did you know that 80% of my listenership is in the United States, 5% in Canada, and somehow 5% in Pakistan, 2% in India. The smallest percentage of a place that we actually have here still is in the Czech Republic. It's 1%. But that's the same in Serbia, in Tanzania, the Dominican Republic, and I actually think that's just one person. I think it's my friend Luis. Turkey, Austria. I'm just as popular in Morocco as I am in Romania. And the same with Japan and Singapore. But what's interesting is that means that people in all of these countries have at least listened to like a second of my podcast. And that to me is insane, right? Like, how did somebody in Angola hear my podcast? And like in other places like Iraq, places where I wouldn't be able to be me, like the way I am in any possible way, in those countries legally. And I find that like fascinating that someone's heard that. I don't think they've subscribed, but they've heard it. And that's really cool to me, because like maybe there's some queer person in some country where they can't be themselves, and they're hearing someone like me and they're like, wow, that person's fucking stupid. At the very least. Or maybe they're, you know, I make them feel like there's hope. Because everyone should be allowed to be this stupid, right? They really should. It's really good. What else is interesting? Oh, so my major demographic is people between 28 and 34 years old. That's 50% of the listenership. With 14% being 35 to 44, and 10% being 23 to 27. That's pretty cool. Now, there are a very small percentage of people under 18 listening, and that's okay. And a bigger percentage, but still a small percentage of people over 60. So that's very interesting. Although, if there's any children listening, I don't know, stop or something? I don't know, like, I'm afraid it's one of my, like, nieces or, like, some child that's related to me, you know, and then are going to tell their parents, or they're going to get caught listening to my sex podcast, and then I'm going to have to hear about it. And I don't like hearing from my family, if I can help it. No, I'm kidding. But I don't hear a lot from my extended relatives, and, you know, I like to see them when I plan on it. I'd like to hear from them when I am expecting it. You know, I don't need anyone calling me and saying, you've got this filthy fucking podcast, you slut. I wish somebody would call me a slut. God, it's been such a while. Anyway, this is a shocker. Like two fingers in the pink and one in the stink. 50% of my listenership is male, or identify as male. That's really shocking to me. 47% is female. 2% not specified. Only 1% non-binary. That's really crazy. And I understand there's a lot more cisgendered people in the world and whatever. But, That's really shocking to me. I am popular with cisgendered males? You never would have thought that because, yeah, because of the way my love life and my sex life have been recently, but that's very interesting. Thank you, men, for listening. And women, too. I mean, 47% isn't that different than 50%. That's weird, though. It feels like, oh, I don't know. I was about to do math, and nobody wants that. It's not interesting anyway. Do you guys know about this thing where, like, okay, so I like men of all ages. I really do. Unfortunately, I don't understand that I'm almost 40. Like, I do and I don't. I'm 36, okay? Let's be honest. And I like guys a lot of the time, and I find out they're, like, 20, 21, 24, and I'm like, oh, shit. And I feel this, like, pressure from especially my, like, friends who are women to be like, ugh, that's too young. Ugh, gross. And it's like, I mean, my best friends would never say that's gross because that's a little bit, like, shamey, but, like, you can feel there's, like, this, like, that's kind of young, like, you know. And I can feel that, too. A lot of younger guys are like, okay, I feel like I'm your nanny or something. Like, I feel like I have to teach you how the world works. And, you know, that's fun. That could be okay for, like, a short while. But after a while, it's like, no, baby, I can't. You know, and I'm nobody's sugar mama or anything like that. You know, I'm not paying for dinner every time. I'm not, bitch, I you know, struggling already. So, but I do find younger guys attractive. But I also find older guys attractive. We're going to get back to that younger guys thing in a second. I also find older guys really attractive. And I mean, like, back in the day when I was doing sex work, I had some clients that were like 80s. I don't know about 90s, but like I had a client who's super old and like I couldn't, he really didn't get hard. And I don't think he ever came, but like he just wanted me to like hold him. He was so sweet. I mean, honestly, like, I was able to pick and choose and, like, run my own business, and I chose to do the sex work I did, and I never fucked for money. I always just, like, it was, like, body work, and it was, like, spending time together, and then, like, energy work a little bit, and, like, very, you know, hippy-dippy, and then, you know, I had sex with clients before, but I was never, like, paid for it, you know? Like, they're never guaranteed penetrative sex or anything. It's just, like, if we're vibing and it's good, we'll, you know, play around. And I kind of do, like, okay, like, you're paying for the first hour, and then after that, if it's, you know, we're vibing, then, like, you know, let's do it. We're two consenting adults. Let's fucking do whatever we want. I have no problem with sex work as long as it's done like that. As long as it's on your terms and you want to do it and you enjoy your clients. And then you realize that there are some really beautiful moments in sex work wherein, like, this older man, like, he was just so fucking lonely. And he got really isolated. I mean, he's that type. It was before COVID. I don't know if he even survived COVID, but he probably was already having, like, his groceries delivered. Like, I don't think he ever left his apartment. And I would go and we would get naked. I'd massage him and whatever. And but then at some point when it got time for, you know, me to jerk him off or something, it was just kind of like, no. He was just like, no, that feels good, but nothing's going to happen. I was like, okay, that's fine. Like, I don't need it to happen. Like, you're good, you know, as long as you feel good and, you know, we're having fun. And then he was like, can you just hold me? And I was just like, oh my God, you poor thing. Like, he would cry sometimes and he'd apologize. And I was just like, you know what? Like, this is about love. Like, this is when sex and sex work are about love and taking care of people. Because he probably had a partner or partners or lovers, you know, that he lost in some way. And And now he's all alone. And I think he had a fucking cat. So, you know, when that's the case, I can't stay long, but I will get the money first. And, cause I'm terribly allergic, but, no, I think he just really needed some touch and some love and, maybe even someone to make him feel beautiful. And I don't know if I did that, but I hope I did. He was really sweet. So anyway, what did I start talking about that? Oh yeah. So I like older guys too. What is this thing though? And I just said some really sweet things about old men, and now I'm going to say something terrible, but it is an observation I've made. This thing where old men have like a huge bulge in their pants and you're kind of like, oh shit, that guy's like hung or something. You're like, what's that about? You know, hey daddy, what's up? And I mean, there's a difference between like when you see a swinging dick in the shorts, you know, if they're not wearing underwear. But this is like old men are wearing underwear and there's like a big bulge and you're thinking like, well, from my experience now, I'm thinking like, oh, he could be wearing like a diaper. Like you never know. I mean, depends on how old, but this thing where like you kind of think like, oh man, I think he's just got a big dick. And then like you see him in the locker room later and you're like, oh wait, you just have humongous balls. Like the actual sack is not saggy. It's just like huge. Like you've filled it with something. And I don't know what that is. I think there's a number of things that could be. It could be like a hernia. It could be like elephant balls, you know, the medical term for that syndrome, elephant balls. I just don't know. It's so weird. And sometimes when a man gets old, it's kind of like he's all balls and there's like very little penis. Or it's like all balls, huge, the longest pubes you've ever seen. And just the idea of some glands, you know, like a little Easter egg, but just the tiniest little baby head poking out. Yeah, that's sometimes, and I mean, I don't want to make anyone feel bad, but, I do see a lot of old men naked and I just think like, okay, my wonder, because I mean, some people just have small penises and maybe he looked like that his whole life kind of thing. But like my wonder is to like, when people stop using their sex organs, do they just kind of like crumple in on themselves, you know, like, and there's a lot of reasons why they might stop using their sex organs. And I mean, obviously, like, maybe they don't want to anymore. I had a client once tell me, and this was not a sex work client, this was a yoga client. He told me that when he would get erections after a certain age, like after his, like, you know, in his 60s or maybe 70s, he was like, it like hurt really bad. Like it just felt like, felt like someone was trying to bend his penis or something. And I was like, oh my God. Like, what? Like, why does it hurt? That's no good. Cause he was like, yeah, I still wanted to have sex, but it just like would start hurting. And so I just said, well, fuck that. I'm over that shit. Maybe it had something to do with like, he required like Viagra or injections or something. And that was too much. And maybe his erection lasted too long. I don't know if maybe he didn't give me enough details. But I was like, shit, that's just, I'm not into that. I'm not into that happening to me. But honestly, I have to say it. I'm not a believer in monogamy. And I think that for someone who's kind of engaged themselves to somebody for so long, the same person, without any freedom to explore sexual fantasies outside of like what your partner is willing to do with you. Yeah. Just maybe the genitals just crumple in on themselves and then, but you're all balls. You're full of soldiers that never got released. And, I mean, that's not really why balls get bigger. You don't store semen in your balls. There's all sorts of other things, but maybe those things are also in your sack. Maybe those things are swell up because they're like, let us out. Or I don't know. Maybe you had a vasectomy and the little soldiers were like, we're trapped. We can't get out. You know, come on. That's how they talk, little soldiers. Can you imagine, like, a war where every soldier talked like that? That would be so annoying. War is so annoying. Anyway, okay, guys. I love that I can have a conversation with myself as if I were talking to other people. I'm fucking crazy. And this is proof. And here now is a word from our sponsor. Be right back. Before we get into today's topic, I wanted to also apologize for last week's recording. So, I'm trying to find a way to record with guests virtually. And I found a way. It's called Squadcast. And I was interviewed for a podcast called POV by Lustry with Aria Vega, who's been on our show. I was on her show in the time I'm describing now, and she's lovely. Or maybe they're lovely. I'm fucking up her pronouns. Way to go, Drew. We use Squadcast for that. And they are so, she has a whole production team. So it was like so professional. They like scheduled it. Like I got an email. I got like an email to say, like, be prepared for our session at this time. Like, make sure you have headphones and make sure you find a quiet place and blah, blah, blah. This is how you successfully are a guest on a podcast. And it was like, great. I think I'm going to find that email and just like copy paste it and just send it to my guests moving forward. You know, just trying to, honestly, I don't know if I have imposter syndrome or if I literally just am faking it constantly. Oh, and I was going to say this in the beginning, too. Lately, I've been getting really fucking tired of hearing myself talk. And I think it's because I work in customer service. And I also think I've been faking it until I make it. I'm planning a comedy show that I book talent for and, like, good talent that have been, like, experienced comedians and, like, won some comedy contests and shit that are, like, televised. And, like, I've got all this stuff that I'm doing in regards to that, and, like, marketing and promoting and trying to, like, be businessy. And I feel like I'm fucking faking it. I mean, I guess I'm pulling it out of somewhere, and it's, like, I sound like I know what I'm talking about. Maybe I do, but that feeling of, like, I have imposter syndrome, it feels crazy. And then, I'm not a caretaker by any means, but I'm trying to figure out this term. It's called something. It's called empathy. It's like empathy fatigue. Is that the word? Let's see. What is this? I just Googled it. This is from betterup.com. Empathy fatigue is common in professionals who teach, care for, or work with others. This includes healthcare professionals, coaches, and teachers. Empathy fatigue is compounded when individuals have other stressors. These stressors include at-home caregiving roles or PTSD from a global pandemic. Well, fuck. I have that. Let me self-diagnose some more. No, but honestly, I don't know if I have PTSD, but I do suffer from trauma from, you know, my past life events. And I did find working through COVID to be very triggering in a lot of ways. And I do regularly have to take care of, like, clients and customers at my job. And I do feel like half the time I just want to look at them and be like, you're a fucking adult. Why are you whining about not having soap in the shower? Why are you whining that? Today a woman came up and told me that the studio she had her class in was too hot and that her heart rate got up to 140 as a result, and she's 70 and she could die. And I was like, she's like, my heart rate never gets up to 140. And I was like, I mean, if your heart rate's getting up, why would you come and complain about the air conditioning? Why don't you just, like, sit the fuck down for a second? Why don't you just chill out? You know what I mean? Like, I'm not in charge of your heart rate. And you've just told me how much of an adult you are. You're in charge of your fucking heart rate, bitch. I have a fucking panic disorder. You think I go and tell someone that you're triggering me by talking too loud? No. I just walk away. I take care of my own fucking self. People that get that far in life without learning to take care of themselves or expecting others to do for them, there's an entitlement there, obviously. Oy vey. But yeah, so you start to get a little fatigued. It's harder to empathize with people if you've had to empathize so much. And I am an empath. I am a very sensitive, empathetic person. Oh, but this is funny. I had a realization because I was having weirdness with a friend recently, and we finally got to talking about it. I kind of was like, what the fuck's up? And more or less. And then she let me have this whole thing that I was completely unaware of, you know, she was experiencing on her half of the friendship. In regards to me. And I was just like, wow, you know, I'm empathetic. I'm an empath. And I'm very sensitive, and I will know the second something is the slightest bit weird or off. But I am not psychic. And I can't tell. I can't, when something's wrong, I can't sit here and I could sit here and wonder, okay, what could I have done something wrong? What could I have done wrong? What could I have said? Going through all the conversations, all the situations, all the events that have happened between us recently. And for me and this friend, a lot of those events involved, you know, pretty heavy drinking. So it's like, you know, a little hairy, who knows? And you know, you're never gonna find out those answers about how another person's feeling unless you talk to the other person and actually make yourself vulnerable and let them know that, like, this is a safe space for you to tell me what's up. I feel like I've done something wrong and I want to understand better, like, what, you know, is going on here. But I love that realization that I'm not psychic. You know, I get anxious before a plane ride. It has nothing to do with my ability to psychically know that the plane's going to crash. I'm not psychic. I don't know that the plane's going to crash. Statistically, it probably won't. And you definitely should get on that plane because you definitely wanted to take that trip. And you should, because you're alive and you came here to have an experience and you are going to die. You know, so get on that plane. You know, if it's already on fire, don't... don't board the plane. But you're not psychic, and your fears and your like anxiety about things, that's not a premonition. It's you. It's you being unsure. It's you being a victim of past life trauma. It's you being like, shit, I don't know what's going to happen. And for me, my anxiety about trips is so much more about not knowing what's going to happen when I get to my destination than if the plane is going to even make it there. Because generally, I enjoy flying. I mean, like, I'll be in the plane, I'll look out the window and be like, oh, look pretty, I see farm fields, ooh. You know, I love a farm field from a bird's eye view. Yeah, it's just, it's really just about, like, where am I going? Who am I going to see? How is that going to go? And fucking, I mean, you can tell I talk to myself all the time. This is basically me justifying talking to myself, doing a podcast, right? I talk to myself when I don't know what's going to happen in a situation. I will, like, dialogue what I might say to the person or what they might say back. But I always get to a place where I exhaust the what are they going to say back thing, you know? And because I don't fucking know. Because I'm not fucking psychic, you know? It's just crazy. I'm crazy. And by the way, I say I'm crazy all the time. I don't dislike that about myself. Also, I don't think it's a good thing to say to a person or to say about yourself, because there's a lot of connotation there, but I'm probably going to keep saying it. And I probably will laugh after I say it, because I don't know. That's something I've called myself for so long. I'm just like, I'm pretty fucking crazy. And I also think that I have done a lot of work on myself. I've done a lot of therapy. I am a lot more self-realized than a lot of people. But I do have emotional mental health issues. And I want those to always be acknowledged. You know, you should know if you're getting into a relationship of any kind with me that, yes, I'm a little cuckoo. I'm a little cuckoo. But it's, like, fun to be around cuckoo. It's never, like, funny, strange. It's funny, haha. So, you guys, I know earlier I was talking about how, like, I will like a guy and then find out he's, like, 20. I'm totally crushing on a guy recently who is 21. And I first kind of saw him at least a year ago, so he must have been 20, or maybe he was 19. I mean, he was young. And he comes and goes because he's, like, in the Coast Guard, but he's so adorable, and that's all I'm going to say about him. But anyway, he is really young, and I don't know what would come of that. It doesn't really matter because I'm not a monogamous person. I don't need to, like, have a boyfriend. I just want to, like, hang out, talk, get to know someone, maybe flirt, maybe make out, maybe have sex, maybe whatever, you know, just see where it goes, whatever we're feeling up to, you know. And there is a difference between someone who's 20 and someone who's 16, okay? It is important to acknowledge that you should not have an inappropriate relationship with a minor. It is important. And the reason why, you could say all these things, and most people would say, because it's gross, because it's disgusting, because you shouldn't like people that are kids, you know, whatever. And we're going to get into all that. This is a really awkward, this was like, I just took a left turn. The main reason why you shouldn't engage in any kind of inappropriate relationship with a minor is because it is absolutely not going to be good for them. It's absolutely not going to be good for their well-being. And we have to protect children. We have to protect kids. We have to protect young minds that are still developing and that can't deal with a lot of adult shit too much. It is very traumatic and they're not ready for it. And there are people in the world who seek to prey on those young minds that are impressionable, who, you know, they're in a really weird place and they're looking for acceptance from anyone who will accept them, you know? I remember being a young person and being horny and being like a mess kind of, and having crushes on like every single teacher I had that was a male, right? And even this one lady who wore a leather skirt, I was like, girl, you're hot. this one teacher we had, her name was Mrs. Slaughter, and she had this like BDSM outfit that she'd wear, and it wasn't really, but it was like she was wearing a leather pencil skirt. And we were like, oh my God. And I was not attracted to her whatsoever, but I was just like, bitch, I'm hard right now. Like, I totally wasn't. But it was like, why? I, like, want that skirt. And I want you to, like, I want to tell me what you were, like, what were you vibing with this morning when you got dressed? Like, what kind of a place, what kind of a headspace were you in? Like, please. So, yeah. The major reason, and I've said this, I'll repeat it. The major reason why you can't engage with people who are younger than 18 is because it's not good for them. And we really should be worried about what's good for other people. Like, what are we doing? How it affects other people? Are we doing something that's really, really bad for our other people, our communities, our young people, our older people? Are we being a compassionate person, or are we just taking, taking, taking? And the reason I say this is because, and I'm going to be really candid here, and it's like really uncomfortable thing to say. But I've felt attracted to guys who are like 17, 16. They're attractive. I can find a person attractive and not be gross about it. A lot of people have been able to classify someone as an attractive person. Be like, that's a handsome young man, or that's a beautiful young girl. And I mean, you see it all the time where older men see young girls and they're like, you know. And I mean, there has not been enough in the way of like putting a foot down about that kind of thing. Like, it's not okay to say weird shit to a young person. It's not okay to sit there and talk sexually about a young person. It's not, none of that's okay. And if you're having a lot of thoughts that are, I want to say like, it's like, how do you say criminalizing? No, like you're criminalizing yourself. If you're having like these thoughts that are like, okay, look, can I say predatorial? That's when you should say, why do I have thoughts about other people that aren't good for other people? You know what I mean? We really can think before we talk. We can think before we act. We should not feel like we have this like freedom to just say whatever we want to people. Like when old men will say, wow, you've really developed, to a young girl, it's like, barf in my fucking mouth. I'm barfing in my fucking mouth. You're skeeving me out. I wish I could kick you in your huge elephant balls and run away. And you know, like I have nieces, and I have heard stories of things that, you know, guys have said to them. And I've heard stories of, and my mom has let it slip, you know, how guys, I told a story once about how my mom had this guy, like, she was having him fix like the washing machine, and he came down to the basement so she could show him the washing machine, and he whipped his dick out. He exposed himself to a fucking client on a job. This was probably like in the 70s, 80s or whatever, but still, like, what the fuck? Like, how in the fucking world, in his mind, did he think that that was good for her? Where did he think that she wanted that? And it's very possible that he didn't think she wanted it, and he was getting off on her not wanting it, which is, that's a predatory mind, right? That's not okay. I remember when I was in New York, I was once on the subway platform, and there was a guy across the tracks, and he was feeling himself through his pants, and he was looking at me and being like, like just some weird face. And I was pretending not to notice him. Unbeknownst to him, I've engaged in public sex before. And I was like, I kind of took it as like, is this guy cruising me? But then I was realizing, oh, this guy, he's only getting off right now because he thinks I don't like it. And the more I act uncomfortable, or the more I look away or whatever, and this was me in my 20s as well. So maybe I was young and stupid. I don't know. Because we're not taught how to feel about these emotions, about any of them, right? This guy, I think he really liked that I wasn't into it, but I was interested in what was going on. I was like observing it, and I was like, at first I was like, oh, he's not bad looking, you know, like maybe we'll like jerk off together, but not like from across the subway. He was on the other side of the tracks. Like I was, and there were people around. It was like, not a lot of people, but there were some. So I wasn't going to engage, but then I realized what the deal was. And then as the train was coming, my train was about to pull up. And right before it pulled in front of, between him and I looked at him and I like blew him a kiss, and he went like, wah! Like, and you could tell that it switched. Like you could tell that he was like, what? This guy likes what I'm doing. And it was like, it changed for him. But then, I feel like I remember him being like, almost being like, I see what you did there. and like then looking at me through the window like, haha, funny. Because I think he still maybe thought that he had the upper hand in that situation, or at least, you know, the hand in his pocket, feeling himself. I don't know. But, and I don't know how old he thought I was, you know. I think I look younger than I am, but I was probably, he probably thought I was in my 20s. I don't think he thought I was a teenager. But anyway, I remember being a teenager and wanting sexual things to happen and doing sexual things with other teenagers and being very, being like, well, I was the right age when I finally did stuff with other guys. And being so excited about it and like just really enjoying it, feeling some shame about it too. But, and I don't know if I ever told, I think I told my first time story once before, but I was like at summer camp and I like me and this guy snuck into like one of the buildings that wasn't being used. And I like blew him and, you know, we did all this stuff together. And like the first time I ever do anything, I suck a guy's dick, I swallow and I make out with him and, like, it was my first kiss. It was my first everything. And then I get a cold afterwards because I forget that I met this guy when I was soaking my feet at the infirmary. And he was there because he had a cold. And then he fucking made out with me. His sick ass made out with me. And then I got a cold. And then my dumb, unexperienced ass thought, oh, God, no, please don't let me have AIDS, is what I thought at, I was probably like 13. It was like, God, did I get AIDS from sucking a dick and making out? And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to die. And then I prayed to God. I said, God, I'll never do this again if I don't have AIDS. And then I literally sucked his dick like 2 days later. So there's that. And then I didn't have AIDS. I think God was looking down at me and shaking his head like, oh, this poor stupid gay boy. Like, he doesn't even know how you get AIDS. And you also don't get AIDS. So you get HIV. Yeah. So thinking about that, I wanted all that to happen. I was pretty happy about all that. I feel like I was ready for all that. I didn't ever engage in anything with an adult as a young person. Although one time I went skinny dipping with a man in his 40s when I was in middle school, but nothing happened. It was weird that I was at a party with a bunch of adults when I was like 12 or something, maybe 11. No, I must have been at least 12. That is pretty weird. And all the adults said, oh, your parents know you're here? Okay, cool. That might have been a little, not okay. And I was drinking, like, rum and coke, and they were serving them up. It was like, woohoo! I'm just trying to, like deep dive now to see, like, what it was like for me as a teenager. And, I mean, I wanted to fuck every man and every boy when I was a teenager. And I do remember being more attracted to older people, older men. I thought they were hot. I like that manly thing, you know? Like, I'm not a pedophile in the sense that, like, I don't like children. I'm not sexually attracted to children. But, you know, I see a boy or a young man who's, like, 16 or 17, and I can say, like, he's a very attractive young man. But that's what I'm going to say. That's as much as I'm going to say. I'm not going to let my mind go in places it shouldn't because that's just not a reality, and that's not something that needs to happen, and it's not mutually consensual. I know, like, some states it's like the age of consent is 16 or 17, but I don't think it should be. I think 18 is a good place, and I think even at 18, some people are still psychologically a little immature and maybe can't handle a relationship with an older person even at that age. But that is the age of the law, and, you know, I do think that young people have should have every right to experiment sexually with people who are also young people, as long as like everyone's being respectful and they're being compassionate. I think it's, there's a lot there. I think you, it's really important that we have conversations with our kids. It's really important that like our boys and girls and, you know, our non-gender conforming kids as well and our trans kids, it's important to let them know, like, you don't ever have to have sex with somebody. You don't ever need to feel like having sex with somebody is going to make them value you more. You don't ever, should never let someone pressure you into doing things that you don't feel ready to do. But if you're with someone you care about and the two of you want to experiment and you're being smart and you're being careful, and you know what, how babies are made, you know, and you know if you're the person you're experimenting with has experimented with others and how much, and if they were being smart and careful in those situations, you know, I think it's important to tell our young people that they should at least know the people they're having sex with. It's not bad to have sex with randos, but there are certain risks involved. And at least in the beginning, maybe just know the people you're having sex with. Trust the people you're having sexual situations with. It's just a little easier that way. And then when you get older and more experienced, you can have a quickie, you know, on the subway platform with some weirdo if you want. But, you know, maybe that's not going to fulfill you in a way, you know. But yeah, so this is all is just to say that I just did a training with my work, and I was actually really impressed by it. I was really impressed by a lot of the training that we did. It was like an online training module, and I wanted to kind of just go through some of what I learned from this. So it says, okay, so this is the one thing. I started taking notes during this training because it did get onto this this topic of what is peer sexual abuse. Okay, so obviously sexual abuse is when another person does something to you or in front of you or whatever that you're not cool with. It's just not good for you. You don't like it. Or you're a minor and you are not able to consent. You're not able to decide if this is something that you actually want. You're not in a place mentally where you can handle that, what's happening, right? So that's sexual abuse, right? Now this topic is about peer on peer sexual abuse. So they even got into, in this training, they got into talking about young people sexually abusing other young people. And they made it kind of sound like, and this was a little vague, and it kind of like, it gets a little, is this like Christian-y? Is this like abstinence kind of shit? You know, because I don't believe in that. I believe in sex education. I don't believe in abstinence. So they're getting into talking about how like anytime two young people do stuff together, it's sexual abuse. And I was like, I mean, as far as this training goes, we can say that because like we're running an institution here that, you know, we take care of kids, we take care of older people, you know, it's like a community center of sorts. We don't need anyone having sex here. So I get that. But that doesn't mean that we need to tell people that when two 16-year-olds have sex with each other, that it's, they're abusing each other. So I just wanted to like be like, that was the only thing I was kind of like, okay. But again, do that somewhere else. Don't do that here where we're supposed to be keeping you safe, you know? No. And again, I don't know. It is really tough to be ready for sex, you know, when you're having it at a young age. So I just, if all the young people, no one's listening, but all the young people listen to me, don't do anything until you're ready. You know, it shouldn't feel like you're violating yourself or letting anyone violate you. You shouldn't feel pressured. You should want to do it. You should like the person you're with. You shouldn't be like, oh God, I like the person I'm with. If I don't do it, they won't like me anymore. They'll dump me. You don't want to be with someone who you have to have sex with in order for them to not dump you. Because it's not conditional love. Or that is conditional. It's not unconditional love, you know. They're making you feel like, or you're just feeling like, and you haven't expressed how you feel, or you haven't asked them, would you still like me if I didn't, you know, have sex with you, you know? You haven't had that conversation. There needs to be more conversation. This is why I have a podcast. So anyway, let's talk about more about what they said about peer-on-peer sexual abuse. So they were talking about how peer-on-peer sexual abuse, if it is actually abusive, right, it can start as bullying. It can come out of natural curiosity, such as, like, you know, when kids play doctor, I'll show you mine, you show me yours. I wrote down playing house, too, because when I was a kid, me and this neighbor boy were playing this game. We were playing this game called Candlelight Dinner for Two. And I was like the wifey and he was the husband. He came home and be like, honey, I'm home. And I'd be like, oh, hi, honey. Like, this was such a little queer child. And obviously this other boy was like, he was into it. It wasn't like I made him play this game. He was like into it. And I was like, honey, I made you dinner. And look, I lit some candles. And we were pretending all of it. And we were like in this little playhouse in his backyard. And then we were like, we had like a little table. And we had fake food and stuff. And we were like, I don't think we kissed each other. But I think we were going to. Like, we were like full on like role-playing adult husband and wife. And then his sister was outside the playhouse and she heard. And she was such a fucking little bitch. And she was friends with my brother. And she was like, oh my God, you two little, I don't know if she called us fags, but she was just like, you guys are fucking gay. Like, I'm going to tell your brother. And I was like, oh my God, shut up. And she's like, yeah, you guys are fucking gay, blah, blah, blah. And her brother wouldn't hang out with me forever. Like, we just didn't see each other. And then I remember one day, I think not that long after that, I fell and broke my wrists rollerblading. And so I didn't do anything physical for a while. But then one day I was out rollerblading and I ran into him. He only lived down the street. I make it sound like the passage of time was probably like a month. But in, you know, when you're a kid, that feels like 10 years. And, you know, I ran into him and he was like, hey, how you been? I was like, good. How about you? Things all right? How are the kids? I was like, yeah. It was like we were, like, we had gotten a divorce and we hadn't seen each other in, like, 6 years. It was so funny. But no, we were never friends again. But then he did this weird thing once where he tried to stick a stick into a squirrel, a dead squirrel's butthole. And then I was like, okay, there's a lot more to unpack there. If you're, like, mutilating dead animals, like, ugh. Of course, I watched it happen. I was like, I don't think you should, you know. I mean, he could be a surgeon now, or he could have murdered people. And he has a really generic name, and I have no idea how I'd ever search for him. But I do kind of want to know if he murdered somebody, or if he's the beginning of my, like, fetish for guys that look like murderers. Why do I like guys that look like they would murder me? What is wrong with me? Okay, anyway. Peer-on-peer abuse examples. Okay, so these were really funny. This was, like, we were doing this training, and these examples were, like, really kind of ridiculous. And I was, like, again, some of them I was, like, okay, if this happened outside of my work, I don't give a shit. This isn't abuse. If both of the kids are like, yeah, let's do this, and they're ready, whatever. If, but it doesn't need to happen where we work, right? And also, like, I want to know who generated these ideas. Like, what adult wrote this script? But also, maybe they got it from real things that happened. I don't know. So here are the examples. Two miners playing a licking game where they lick each other's private areas. That was one example. And you were supposed to, like, drag it into, like, this is pure sexual abuse, pure on pure sexual abuse, or it's not. You're supposed to drag it into the right drop box or whatever. And, you know, spoiler alert, these all went into the yes box, right? Okay, two, they lick each other's. Two minors watch pornography together. I thought it said in a fart. In a fort in the childcare room. So obviously, no, don't do it at the childcare room. But I mean, honestly, I watched porn when I was six. Because my brothers had porn. I saw their magazines. I saw their videotapes. I'm not saying I should have, but I did. And I liked them. I was like, what's this? Holy cow. And I watched them with my cousin. I showed them to my cousin. And I wouldn't say that. And we were like best friends. We were around the same age. We were both like six. I don't think I abused her. I don't think she abused me. We were both like, what is this? Like, it was like we found the cure for cancer. Well, not, no, okay, that's not even what it was like. It was like we found something that was unbelievable. We were like, what are they doing to each other? You know, but we were curious, you know. But I wouldn't say I was a sexual predator at six because I showed my cousin this video I found, you know. Two teenagers sexting each other on the bus to an off-site field trip. I mean, really? It's not, you shouldn't do that at school. You shouldn't do that at my work. But, like, two teenagers sexting, that sounds pretty, like, harmless to me, you know? One minor asking another minor to show them their privates in their cabin bunk. I literally did that a million times when I was at summer camp. We were in high school. There was one time, it was one night where, like, okay, in summer camp, all, there was a cabin full of like 14 guys. And somehow, I swear to God, we didn't plan this. Somehow the four gay guys, because this was an arts camp. So like there were tons of gay people and nobody could say a shit about it because everyone was like, it was like zero harassment policy or whatever. And there was musical theater and music and dance and acting. So there's a ton of gay guys and gay girls too. So we all picked our bunks, but nobody, I actually showed up late. I didn't even pick my bunk. They were just like, oh, you gotta be in that. That's the only free bunk. And I ended up being on the bottom bunk with, I was on the top bunk. I was at the top bunk and the guy below me was gay and his name was Ben or something. And then the bunk next to ours, we were all in a corner. There was my friend Lee and there was a guy, Michael, and we were the four gay guys and we did not plan that. Nobody planned it. We were just like, what? And I remember one night all the other guys were probably sleeping. We were all like chatting and we always used to get in trouble because we would have our little loud gay corner and they'd be like, shut up, I'm trying to sleep. We're straight. We need our sleep. And one night we all decided we were just going to show each other our penises. And I remember it was like so cute. And I remember my friend Lee was like, oh my God, your penis is like so pretty. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, that's like the nicest thing I've ever been told. I was like, your penis is so beautiful. He was like, oh my God, thank you. Oh, it was so sweet. And then I can't remember. I think Michael was like, I'm not showing you my penis. And then Ben was like, here's my penis. Like, before we even asked, here's my penis. I don't remember Ben's penis. I think it was nice. It was a nice little Jewish penis. I think it was circumcised, so I was kind of like, okay, I've seen that before. We were probably all circumcised, but this was before I was obsessed with uncircumcised penises. Anyway, but it was a cute little thing, and I don't think anyone was hurt by it. It was inappropriate to do at summer camp. But we were like, we don't give a shit about the rules, you know, like we didn't tell our counselor about it. Here's what's more inappropriate. We would have, it wasn't military at all, but we had Reverie at night, and we had taps in the morning. They'd have someone go out and play the bugle or whatever, and then everyone would have to run out to the flagpole and line up, and they wouldn't have everyone get up first, and like they wouldn't have everyone take showers and get ready and be in uniform. Everyone would run out in their pajamas. And I mean, this was like the counselors were like freshmen, sophomore in college, and they were counseling kids in high school, kids in middle school, you know, and then there were younger kids too. But we were all in different divisions. And I witnessed this in the intermediate division and in the high school division. Everyone like being woken up suddenly by a bugle and having to run out to the flagpole. And I just remember like so much morning wood, like campers and counselors with boners basically almost sticking out of their pajamas. And it was like, I never had one. And I used to look around and go like, are you serious? And it was a thing of like the directors and like the adults, they were all ready. They got up before they played taps, or is that Reverie? What the fuck is it called? Before they played the thing, they were all ready. So they were professional. They never showed up with a boner, but it was a thing of like, they'd look around and they'd just go, oh, you guys. And they'd kind of like roll their eyes and be like, whatever. But that's not really okay. I mean, it isn't how you are if you naturally have just been shot out of bed and, you know, by a trumpet, but I mean, I don't know, take a minute. How important is it that you get to the flagpole in like 5 seconds? Maybe take a minute to cool things down. And definitely you don't get to come out to the flagpole and have your hand down your pants and play with it. And that wasn't probably happening by the counselors, but it was definitely happening by the campers. And it's like, boy, get your fucking hand out your pants, okay? No. No, 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 no. That's for private time, okay? Because this is a public place, and we don't all need to see that, you know? So there's that. That was my summer camp in the, I guess that was like early 2000s. That's when that happened. We always think of like weird, you know, delinquent situations happening like in the 90s and 80s and 70s and any time before that, right? But no, I mean, this crazy shit was still happening. They were still, you know, forensic science wasn't even great in the early millennium. So like, you know, we're only just now getting to a place where like we're being really vigilant about cracking down on not just like predators, but like situations where predators thrive. Like we're trying to protect our young people and keep them out of situations where they might be preyed upon by predators, right? Which is really good. But I also think that we need to be really invested in figuring out what's going on in people's minds. What's going on in a society where certain things are acceptable that shouldn't be? What's going on in a society where, also at the same time, where we decide this is bad, this is not bad. And sometimes things that society deems bad aren't bad. And some things that society deems good are not good. And so there's this like brain fuck and this like huge social gaslighting happening. Like telling people that sex is bad, but like killing people is okay. And no one's saying killing people is okay, but indirectly they are by making it like really bad to watch sex on videos and stuff, but like showing blood and guts on like mainstream television. Like that is exactly what that is doing. And that is a huge brain fuck, right? That's not okay. Sex literally can create life. Killing people could not do that. It literally ends life. So I think that we need to examine our social mind space in a lot of ways, not just saying that, and I'm obviously predators have done really bad things, but predators are not that simple, right? If we're talking about like murderers, we're talking about sexual predators, any of that, any kind of predator, a lot of times we find that like serial killers, they'll have like a wife and kids sometimes, you know, and their family will be like, we had no idea that he was raping and murdering 16-year-old girls, you know? Like, we would have never thought. He went to church. He was like, you know, he had a job. He always showed up on time. He did everything right, you know? He was a figure in the community. Like, there's so many times when people cannot believe that this person was a predator all along. But people aren't that simple. And there is stuff going on in the mind, in the brain, and there's trauma. And, you know, we find that a lot of predators have been preyed upon at some point. And it's, that does not mean that all predators have, or that they all have that trauma, or that, like, anyone who's been traumatized is now susceptible to becoming a predator. That is not what that means, because more people that have been preyed upon than not, you know, don't become predators. They just stay as victims or survivors, right? They don't prey upon others in the same way. But we do see cycles of abuse being carried on. We see, you know, like in my family, my grandpa used to beat the shit out of my dad to the point where he almost died. He smashed his head into the concrete floor of the garage one time. He would trap him behind the couch when he was little, and his drinking buddy would go on the other side, and they would scare him, and they would be screaming at him, and he'd try to crawl out, and they wouldn't let him out the other side, and he would start to panic because he got claustrophobic. My dad had terrible claustrophobia his whole life as a result of that. That's really dark shit. I'm sorry, but it's what happened. And then my dad was physically abusive to my older brothers. He would hit him and take his belt off. And of course, it was like, oh, it's the 70s. You know, that's perfectly acceptable, the 70s and 80s. And then in the 80s, my brothers got it bigger, and my dad and my brothers would have fist fights. By the time I came along, I was born in 86. My dad never put a hand on me. I don't think he put a hand on my other brother, who was only 6 years older than me. But there was a lot of verbal abuse, a lot of mental and verbal abuse and neglect. And I witnessed physical abuse happen. And, you know, my brothers were all alcoholics and drug addicts. And there was a lot of, like, verbal, mental abuse passed on to their kids, and neglect, obviously, as a result of their drug abuse, and not being able to be the parents they should be. And so it is inherited, you know, like, it is passed on. It seems like each generation gets a little bit less abusive as we're moving towards, like, this place of being able to see ourselves, but that's not always true. And also, I do believe that we're working towards shining light on the darkness and seeing things for what they are. That's really important. But when we see things, I think by saying that this is a predator, this is bad, we have to end this, we have to eliminate this from society, you're pushing the predators deeper into the darkness where they can't be seen. They're going into hiding, and they aren't going to go away. Just like you can't ignore the parts of yourself you don't like. You know, it has to be examined. It has to be heard. It has to be, not utilized, but it has to be observed. I don't know what the word was I was trying to use there. Anyway. Okay, so this is interesting. There are different kinds of abusers. Now that we're talking about abusers, let's talk about this. There are preferential abusers, which is like pedophiles. And they are also groomers, right? So there's this movie coming out now on TV, but it's about an actual thing that happened. This man and his wife, and I think he had a couple of kids, they moved in across the street from another family, a mom and a dad and kids. And this man, like, earned the whole family's trust. They all loved him. They all thought he was this great guy. And he had the family that lived there before, they had a little girl. And he would come over a lot and hang out with the kids, hang out with the parents. And he really formed an attachment with this little girl, and to the point where, like, he would say, like, oh, I want to take her to get her some, you know, shoes for school, or I want to take her to, you know, we want her to come over for dinner at our house or whatever. And it was just like, oh, he really just likes her. He sees potential in our daughter. And they all liked him so much that they trusted him. And one day he just left with her. He's just like, I'm going to take her on a trip. And then they were like, hey, what's up? Like, where'd you guys go? Are you guys coming back? Did you bring our daughter back? Because they were so groomed. They were so, like, lied to. And you know, they believed this guy was a good guy. They didn't believe this guy was going to take their daughter and sexually abuse her and try to pretend like she was his girlfriend. And that's exactly what he did. And they ended up getting the little girl back, but he had groomed the little girl to thinking that she loved him and needed him. And she's like, no, I don't want to be with you guys. I want to be with him. I love him. And it's like, holy shit. All sorts of, like, fucked up. Right. So that is what this person is, the preferential abuser. They are, they're groomers. They can groom an entire family as well as their victims. They could groom an entire community into thinking they're one way and they're not. Apparently sexual orientation has nothing to do with it. It doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. So this idea that all pedophiles are gay is incorrect. The majority of pedophiles are not gay. They're heterosexual, because the majority of people are heterosexual. And there's that. These people, they like certain types of children or people. So I think that if they like people of color, they're going to stick with that. If they like little girls, they're going to just abuse little girls. You know, it's like one type of person. Situational abusers are the other type. There's less planning involved or preference. They may be hypersexual people, and they may have a lack of connection with adults. So this is a sticky one, not to use that term, but it's a harder one to see. And I think there's definitely grooming involved there too, but I think there's a lot of people that, like I said before, like would have ideas about wanting to be predators. They have feelings of like wanting to prey on other people, and they're looking for opportunities to where, like, what are demographics of people that can't defend themselves, can't say no, are easily impressionable, you know, made to believe things, or, you know, like when people sexually abuse people of color, or people who are trans, or people who are kind of on the margins of society, because they know that there will not be anyone to help them when they cry out and say, like, oh my God, like, there's something terrible happening. No one's going to answer their calls. So they can get away with abusing these types of people. I think situational abusers, a lot of times, without realizing it at first, and then definitely later realizing it, are looking for weak points in society where they can abuse people. And the reason why they want to, and I don't think that sexual abuse has much to do with sex. I think it has to do with, like, feeling in power, feeling in control. I think feeling powerful, especially for a lot of men, it makes them sexually aroused. I think that is a big deal for men. And again, like, there's all these, like, elements of power play in, like, you know, BDSM and fetish stuff, but that's two consenting adults, right? There's two people that said, like, you're going to be the dom, I'm going to be the sub, and we're both on board with this. And we've got a safe word. It's all consensual, right? it's not, doesn't mean you're a pervert if you want to do power play. It is not okay to prey on weak people or, people that can't defend themselves, people that don't know better, people, you know, it's just not okay. And that's why it's not okay. And we can't, I think we all have ideas sometimes that are malicious or evil. And I'm not saying that we're all pedophiles. I'm saying that like you might get mad and you might really hate somebody and you might be like, I want to fucking kill that bitch. If I see her again, I'm going to fucking stab that bitch. And you might just think that you're not actually going to stab a bitch. Right. But sometimes you're so angry that you have malicious thoughts, or you're so lonely, or you're so this or that, and you have thoughts that are not good thoughts. And I don't think it makes you a bad person. I just think you're a person. And I think that the more we say these thoughts are bad, we're not going to think them, and these thoughts are okay to think, the less you're examining your thoughts, the less you're shining the light on the dark in that situation. You really have to say, that's a thought that I don't like having, or like I, that's a thought that like society would not accept as an okay thought also. And I also think that it's not an okay thought, and I can justify in my more rational part of my brain, like why it's not an okay thought. And so now I have to say like, why am I having it? You know, why am I having it? And that's okay to ask that question. It doesn't mean you have to be worried about who you are. You're not a bad person. You're not a weirdo. You're not a sicko. You're not a murderer. Now, I think some people are overwhelmed with thoughts that are bad. And that's a different story, right? That's something else. And that requires more aggressive therapy or treatment or help, right? Those people need more help. But again, they need help. They can't be brushed aside, and they can't be told that they're not fixable, or, you know, they need to be locked up away from society. Like, these people can get help, and we need to research more. We need to do more in the way of helping people with these issues, right? So pedophiles, you can't just label them a pedophile and say, we're going to eject you into the sun. You know, no. There's a lot of people with sick ideas, and a lot of them are politicians, by the way, and we're not ejecting any of them into the sun. Some of them are being reelected, and by the way, November's on the way, so, you know, consider that. There's a lot of sick people in places of power, and we can't eject them into the sun. That's the joke I always make, is I always want to just like, bing, whoosh. You know, now they're gone. They're just, they've been ejected into the sun. But you can't. You can't just kill everyone that doesn't agree with you, or you can't just kill everyone that's not okay, or, you know, sick or this or that. I mean, that's fucking fascist, right? But we have to talk about issues. We have to shine light on the dark. Okay, let me say a few more things. Neither one of these situational or preferential abuser types are what they would call stranger danger, right? So we used to be assumed that if someone was going to prey upon, especially children, it was going to be a stranger, someone that's not a part of your community. Turns out, more often than not, a person who abuses another person has an actual close relationship with that person, because they've earned the trust of the person being abused. So a lot of times it's someone in the community that child or person knows, and they're able to gain access in that way. What did I write down here? Oh, Grace Tame, who was a girl that was abused as a child and grew up, I believe, and she was living in, I think she's in Australia. She said that grooming was a form of possession. It was a possession designed by the perpetrator. That's something that stuck out to me, and I can't remember why. Because I think that's what it is. When you're groomed, it's like you you belong to that person. You lose your ability to say, hey, wait a minute, that's wrong. You're more of like, almost like Stockholm syndrome, where you're like, you now need this person. You're afraid to not have this person in your life, or their acceptance, or this or that. You've become dependent on them emotionally, at least, and they're doing things to you that you don't like, but you're afraid to not have them. So it's like they possess you by grooming you. That was really powerful. That came out in there too. There's some rules that they said you should put in place for your institution, and you should look out for anyone who's breaking simple rules, because that's where you can stop things before they become an actual situation of sexual abuse. So the rules are no inappropriate touch. It says that groomers, they actually use touch to desensitize children. They make it seem like any kind of touching is okay, and they start moving from like maybe just a touch on your hand, touching your shoulder, to more intimate touching. And it's over time it desensitizes people into thinking that it's okay to do any of that. The institution should have a rule that says that no adult should ever be alone with a child in a room. It should always be in a place that's publicly witnessable. Like, other people are around, they could see the two people interacting. They should never be alone together. You should look out for any adult who's showing favoritism to a child. Like, I like this kid, this is my favorite kid. Giving gifts, giving compliments only to one child. They should not have outside contact. So, like, if you're a teacher and you have students, you shouldn't just, like, hang out with one of your students at the mall. You shouldn't have a personal outside relationship outside of the institution with a child, or even a couple children, because it doesn't have to just be one. It could be a couple, which is so funny because when I went to boarding school, they would have, God, I can't remember what they called them. It was like groups, it was like students in groups of like 5 to 10, and there would be like a faculty advisor or someone either on faculty or staff at the school. They would take that group of kids off campus, and they would like do, like, they'd go to dinner, they'd go shopping, or, and I can't remember what they called that, but, apparently that's not a great idea. Although there was enough kids that maybe it was okay, but it's a little iffy. No inappropriate language, no swearing around the kids, no saying sexual things. Just like, that's the same thing. It desensitizes kids into thinking that like these things that are normally bad are okay to happen just between us. So some stuff about victims and survivors, the whole idea of the boy who cried wolf. I know, like, there's a story of the boy who cried wolf, and eventually no one trusted him, and then they just didn't come running, and the wolf ate him or whatever, when the wolf was actually there. That actually is, it's a story that creates an inaccurate narrative. So the narrative becomes that children will make false reports about being abused, or anyone being abused is making a false report. That's always where we go to when we hear something we don't like. Oh, well, she's probably just making it up to get like fame or money out of him or something, you know, especially like when adult women are abused by men in power. And it's like, no, we should listen to victims. We have to have laws and rules that like support reporting incidences of abuse. And it should be okay to report something without being like, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to get someone fired if I report this thing. And that's why rule breaking is a good thing to like watch out for, because like if you just notice a coworker breaking some rules, that's better to report that early than to like not say anything, and then all of a sudden you witness something that's really inappropriate happening, and now you have to report that, and now you have to be like, oh God, I don't know. Like, if I report this, is this person going to have, you know, lose their job, have their life ruined, their reputation? And it's like, you should have reported those rules being broken earlier. But if you didn't, and now you see something really bad happening, again, the most important thing is to believe the victim. The most important thing is to, and you can say to a victim who reports abuse, you can say, first of all, listen to them. You can say, I believe you and it's not your fault and I will help you. I'm going to get you help. And then your priority as an adult is to report that, get help for that victim. Especially if it's a minor. Do not promise the victim or a child victim that you're going to keep it a secret. If it's a child, you're legally obligated, I think, especially at a place where you take care of kids. But in some places, any person who receives reports of child abuse or sexual child abuse, especially too, you're legally obligated to report it. If you don't, that could have negative ramifications for you. And do not ask the victim to divulge more information about it. They will tell you what they feel comfortable telling you. And then you just say, okay, I'm going to help you. I believe you. It's not your fault. I'm going to help you. Don't ask questions. If it's a child, again, keep them safe and make sure that they have no contact with their abuser after that. And that's all I've got from that. That got really serious. This went in a lot of places, and we're about at an hour and a half, so I'm not going to go too many more places. I think I've said all I need to say, guys. I think this is all really important, and I guess my takeaways from this long-ass rant I just went on are that, we should be loving to people in the sense that we actually care about them and their well-being. We need to shine light on the dark. And we need to have more conversations. We need to talk about things, right? We need to support conversations between parents and children, between citizens and lawmakers, and between friends, between families. You know, like, we just need to be talking and expressing emotions. We need to be led by our hearts, but we also need to, like, learn to understand all of the beautiful emotions that we have as people. Because there's a lot, and there's so many that confuse us. And like I said, I've had a shit ton of therapy, but I still am very confused by a lot of my emotions. And especially when I have like four emotions at once. And I'm like, ah, I need a drink, right? So anyway, you guys, let me say it again. Just a reminder again, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at MakeSexPod, on Instagram at MakeSexWithMePodcast. And if you want to write in, and I hope you do, like I said, do it. You can make up a fake name. You could change all the names in the story. You could even, like, it could even be a work of fiction. I don't give a shit. I just don't want to have to write my own write-ins, right? Because that's not honest. You can write in at makesexwithmepodcast@gmail.com. And as usual, thank you, my lovers. And I hope that you're filling all of your holes with whatever makes you happy. Bye-bye.